You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy in Wilson Homes. Sam McClure and Bruce Evo with you for the next hour. And we've got Chris Tozewski coming on, Beaver, Australia's new heavyweight boxing champion.
Looking forward to having a chat to him, Sam, a week on or week and a day on from probably ending.
Destroying Paul Gallen.
Yeah, probably ending Paul Gallen's career, who's 40 years young. And
so he won't fight again?
I'd be staggered if he did.
Okay.
Copping a beating from Tozewski after last year, copping a beating from Justice Huni. He's 40. Gee, he's taken a lot of punishment, both as an NRL player and as a boxer over a dozen or so pro fights. So I think it's time for him to just stick to the media work.
And we're going to have another look at our chat with Ben Brown, the Melbourne star forward, who we chatted to earlier in the show. Big game this weekend because it's his 150th and once again playing against his old club. He's got a habit of that.
First game for Melbourne was against North. His 150th career game is going to be against North. I think his first game for North, his senior debut, was against Melbourne.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird. That keeps happening. Hmm. Game 200 must be against North as well.
Yeah, well, as he told us, well, I think his 100th was against the Dockers, so hopefully we'll be able to work.
Didn't quite work out.
Yeah.
But let's get to this man, the chief of the AFL record. Ash Brown, all here for Polaris. Welcome, Ash.
Hello, boys. Good to be with you again.
I don't like sitting in this chair that Jared's got because I don't get to see you as much, Ash. That's disappointing. I have to change. This is good. This is good radio. Just moving the screens.
Interior decorating while we're on air.
What takes your fancy this week, Ash? Media things.
Well,
there's a lot to talk about.
There's been a lot to talk about. I didn't see it, but the Eddie McGuire, Caro Wilson.
Oh, yes. Let's get straight to it.
On the Footy Classified last night. It's got everyone talking.
Play the audio, Matty.
It's one game, Ed. It's not going to change everything.
I like your perspective because it's a club president perspective.
No, this is...
Like, you understand the cost of a club.
I'd tell you more than that, mate. I'll give you the tip. When Mr. Amazon, when Mr. Paramount comes to the table and says, what are the top shows? And it's got Married at First Sight, and all the rest of it, because we left 2 million people on the table in Queensland and New South Wales,
let me finish. They look at the whole
Caro, Caro, I wouldn't know. I've only done the negotiations in this and ran a footy club for 23 years.
Greater
Saturday
Western
afternoon,
giving
you,
up
you know
soccer,
what you do? You play ring.
Australian rules
what
footy.
What do you lose Caro, by going to toilet?
Caro, you
what,
play,
do you what do you lose?
Caro, stop for
tradition,
a second.
One,
Caro,
yet another.
Caro,
shift away.
Stop, please. They play ring tin tin on a Saturday afternoon.
been on that desk, that's quite funny.
We needed the boxing bell.
It did.
Seconds out.
That is sort of vintage Ed, really.
Vintage Ed.
Just, I'm not sure if it's relevance deprivation syndrome or it is a man who has been in the room a few times trying to tell Caro what really goes on.
So has he been consulted by the AFL as part of previous broadcast deals, Ash?
I think.
Is that what he was alluding to?
I think I took that as, you know, he's, if not officially in the negotiating room, he certainly would be having conversations with key negotiators.
I mean, you could say what you want about Ed, but he did run Channel 9 for a short time. He's run a very successful footy club for a long time. He's well versed to speak about what the footy rights are worth.
Yeah, I think he'd have a reasonable understanding of what takes place in these negotiations. I think he's going to be disappointed. I think the AFL might go one more year at 230. But
do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gill's thinking last year, there was going to be a 230 grand final last year until it got moved, and it was to thank you for the fans for their support.
Mm.
So I don't see any reason why that changes. I think they'll announce 230 and then say, but from 2020, get ready everyone, from 2023, we're going to twilight. I think it'll be a sort of, I'll give everyone 12 months to get used to the notion of a twilight grand final.
So I'll put all my cards on the table here, and that I know that I'm in the minority. Like, absolutely. But I'm just being honest here, as a 30-year-old that can kind of go in the wind where the wind blows a little bit, I could not care less what time the grand final was on. I couldn't care less if it was midday, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. It just, I'll be there watching it. It's grand final day. I love the festivities. I love the grand final morning. I love walking down Swan Street in the afternoon, like whatever it is. I don't mind. Caro seems to be passionate about the fact that the vast majority of people want it to stay at 2:30. And I know that we've done polls, but I still haven't got to the bottom of whether that's true or not.
I'm not sure the vast majority true. The people who make the most noise about it are the people, and such as the AFL Fans Association.
The AFL Fans Association, goodness gracious me.
The ones who make the most noise about it and most shrill about it are the ones who invested in wanting to stay where it is. And I think the majority of people don't really care.
Why does it have to stay where it is? I mean, tell me other things in the world that stay where they... But that doesn't mean that something another time can't work.
Is it broken?
No, I don't think so at all.
Why are we trying to fix it?
Well, I don't mind them trying a 440 grand final because...
Yeah, I'd go to... I'm happy for 2 hours later, no more than that. I'd happy with a 4:30 start.
So what's wrong with a night grand final?
Tell you one group that wouldn't be happy with a night grand final, and that's the Thin Blue Line.
Yeah, police would definitely not be happy with it. Although, Beaver, I was on Swan Street after the 2017 grand final when Richmond fans nearly tore the whole joint down, and that was a daytime grand final that turned into night. They were still partying at 11 p.m.
The City of Melbourne are very keen for a twilight grand final.
Oh, as if the city, what the Lord Mayor?
No, I think the restaurants and bars and what have you, because they get lunches and dinners, and that works for them.
Because you get pre-game, post-game.
Yeah, pre-game, post-game. So
it's not that cool.
So they're in favour of it. But, we're not really talking about the grand final start time, but I think it will be. I think Eddie's going to be jumping up and down for at least one more year, because I think my gut feel it'll be status quo.
If we get more TV like last night, then...
yeah, it's good. I loved it.
Let's keep dragging it out.
And given we're going to do hand wars later in the show, Tom Brown put his neck on the line last week when he said that the AFL had basically already chosen it to be a twilight grand final. Now Ash is coming out and saying, I reckon it's going to be 2:30.
That's not male. That's just gut feel.
Yeah. Okay. But as someone that has previously gone with the story a little earlier than he had to, you sort of end up having a few sleepless nights when other people start reporting different things. Anyway, we digress. We should probably talk about the Bombers, Ash, and very much from a media sense. Tell me, what was your gut reaction, your first reaction, when you heard Dyson Heppel say that he hadn't seen the Luke Parker vision before?
Absolutely staggered. Of all the things I've heard this year, that one just blew me away.
I believe him.
Well, then if that's right, then there's an issue with the... How do you not brief? If they decide we're going to put you on the couch live at 6:30 on Monday night, how are you not briefed? This is what they're likely to discuss with you.
And I think the club would say that he was briefed about the incident, but he was specifically saying that's the first time he'd seen that vision. Now, I agree. I'm a cynic as well. You can roll your eyes at that, but I'm not. Given that Dyson has a record of being a pretty honest person, I'm willing to take that at face value, that he knew of the incident but hadn't seen the vision.
I don't doubt that.
But you're saying that he should have been shown.
He should have shown the vision. Okay. That's what I don't understand.
Were you just on the Dyson Heppel interview for someone as polished a media performer as Dyson is, having just turned 30, as we know, on that horrible night for them, played his 200th game?
Good age, 30.
I couldn't believe he dropped the magic on...
Twice.
Was it twice?
Twice. Yeah. F-word twice.
Yeah.
I was watching that live in the Nine Studios before Classified, because Caro called in sick. I thought, he said it once, and I went, did he just say... And then 15 seconds later, he went again. I went, hang on. And because they're live there on the couch.
The beauty of live TV. Yeah, a bit surprised. If it come from Dyson Heppel, who's a pro and a great performer, and one of those players, he said, could he do media afterwards? Probably could when he's finished playing. Very surprised. But just shows that passions and tensions are inflamed at Essendon at the moment.
How does the footy record write positive stories about the Bombers at the moment?
Well, that's interesting.
You don't.
We got their
just pretty important year for them, isn't it?
So we've committed to doing a cover story in Essendon. I mean, I'm happy to share this. I mean, I'm trying to work out what the angle's going to be, because you could write a piece about what a big, important, powerful club they've been for 150 years, but their supporters and others will look at it and say, well, it's a joke. I mean, it's just a puff piece about a club that's in a serious crisis at the moment. So trying to spin it. The thing I find really interesting, with they requested Carlton to play that game. I know we're looking 2-3 weeks down the track. Carlton will thrash them at this stage. It's going to be a miserable evening.
Right here, right now, it doesn't
They handpicked Carlton. They should have handpicked Hawthorn, their other big rival, who they probably have a 50-50 chance of beating on that night. But they've picked Carlton. Carlton will comfortably beat them. Carlton, the same team that turned up to two of Collingwood's
Rained on the parade.
Twice they've done it, Carlton. So they'll be looking to make the hat-trick. Don't you worry about that. You know, if I'm a Carlton supporter, I am circling the calendar to get to the game as well. But they'll get 90,000 that night, beat it. Maybe Carlton supporter will turn up wanting to watch the parade being rained on.
As a person that grew up a Carlton supporter, I am very interested to see what crowd they get tomorrow night at Marvel Stadium against Sydney. Because as we know with Carlton supporters, they tend to come out of the woodwork when things are going well. And that's not a criticism. That's just the way that the Navy Blue operate. And things haven't been going well for a while. Now, they got over 40,000 when they played North Melbourne. Sydney fans tend to make a good enough turn up, and they're going well, Beaver.
It shouldn't even be a discussion point. What are you alluding to?
I think they could get close to 50.
Absolutely.
That would be a massive result for a club that has basically been asleep for 20 years.
That's 66,000 against your Hawks, Ash, back in the first month of the season.
Here I was thinking I was making a big statement.
If it's anything less than 48, I'll fall off my chair.
You
get 8,000 to 10,000 Swans fans who come to every game in Victoria because they only play 5 or 6, and that rusted on support still there. No, there'll be barely a spare seat in the house for that game. So
I'm surprised we haven't heard whether it's actually a sellout yet. Has there been any announcement that it's...
Oh, I haven't yet to hear that.
Yeah. We should check on that.
We should. And I know we've got a break. And after the break, I want to talk to you, Ash, about something that Beaver and I were discussing off-air before we started tonight a couple of hours ago. But first, the Dustin Martin conversation. Dimmer's response, Peggy O'Neill's response, Lethal saying he didn't like Dimmer's response. Where do you sit with it? We made too much of this in the media, or
no? We never make too much of this. This has got everything. This is what we like. It's dusty and it's trade. I mean, this is why there's a radio station that goes for 3 weeks every October talking about this sort of stuff. Mm. I don't think we've made too big a deal of it. I think there is a smallish window. I mean, the trade experts know more about this than me, and it's sort of suggesting that there's no cap room at either the Giants nor the Swans to make it happen. But I think there is a window there, and I think. Damien Hardwick's remarks are planting a small seed. If it does happen, I'm trying to control the narrative from the start and maybe trying to steal Richmond supporters into accepting that it may happen. Or the Tiger fans I speak to, Beaver, seem to be thinking, this is great. He's been brilliant for us. If we can fast-track the rebuild with a couple of early picks or Tom Green or Tim Taranto or someone, we'll do it. They're being very pragmatic, the Richmond supporters.
Well, they certainly have. I mean, and as the senior coach said, he doesn't owe them a jot. Which club would he go to? I mean, because you're
Sydney.
Talking, well, Tim Taranto and the names that Ash just mentioned play for the Giants. They don't play for the Swans.
Mm, then you go to Sydney if he goes.
I think he'd rather play for Sydney.
They'll find a way, the Swans.
They always do.
They always find a way. Buddy's about to finish. There's a
it's
lot
more
of
romantic. The Tom Green thing with the... You know, grandson of Michael, multiple premiership player, makes more sense. But, well, Matt Rendell, just a ambit.
Was he Papley in a first-round pick?
Yeah. You'd take that in a heartbeat, wouldn't you?
If you're Richmond or Sydney?
Richmond.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would. Dusty's, what, nearly 31, didn't you say?
31 next month. With a lot of...
And Richmond paying part of the salary?
Well, no, you couldn't do that.
No?
No, you couldn't do that. I'd be saying, if I was Richmond, you'd be giving up Dusty. You'd say, by the way, he's coming with $1 million. You guys worked that out. Although Sydney could offer him a longer-term deal and you could stretch it out. Anyway, we digress. Ash, the women's deal has finally been locked in. Thank goodness we got there. I actually think it's a fantastic deal for the women. 94% pay rise. And they're not earning huge money, but you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. I take Chloe Malloy's point last night that they would like to play more than 10 games. I agree. I think they probably should. But all in all, I think that's a good deal.
It's a great deal for 1 year. It recognises that they need to get to an end place, but they can't get there yet. But I think the 94% increase is terrific. These women are putting so much into the game, and they're going to start to be financially rewarded and recognised for that. Two seasons in 1 year is going to be complicated. I think there'll be a few sore girls towards the end of the season, having done two seasons in 12 months. But it's necessary to get to where they want to be at the end. So it's great. Great we've got a starting date. Great, we've got a date for the grand final, and the AFL can get to work on what should be a pretty spectacular season with all 18 clubs.
So Chloe Malloy told Beaver and I last night that that she compared Nicole Livingston being at the swimming as a parent leaving her at a shopping centre when she was young, which I thought was a fascinating analogy or metaphor, if you like. Have you got a problem with Nicole Livingston having a side gig?
Absolutely none, because we're living in an era of mobile phones, iPads, laptops, Zoom. She can be across the key points. You know, if she's at the pool for a couple of hours calling races and calling heats, I imagine heats probably take a couple of hours to get through in the morning. I don't think it's a particularly big deal. There's a lot of time in the day. There's always a big gap of swimming. Don't forget they run heats in the morning and finals in the evening. She's got several hours a day, many hours a day to devote to what's been done. The nitty gritty, she's also not on the AFL executive, Nicole Livingston. So
what you're saying is she's not involved in the key decisions anyway.
The number crunching that to get to the final outcome, I don't think she would have been.
That would have been Gill and Travis and
Walter Lee and those sort of people. So I don't think she's in the room for the framework part of it. I'm sure she was involved in. So I'm not. I respect Chloe's opinion. She's at the coalface of AFLW, but I don't think it's a big deal.
You got an opinion on that, Pete?
I can understand the bad look of it.
The optics,
as we like to say these days. But I concur with everything Ash has just said. You've got to remind yourself the way that swimming championships are run. Heats in the morning, finals in the evening. She would have from lunchtime, you know, midday, 1 o'clock, whatever it is, until six in the evening to go about other business, which you would like to think would be AFLW business. So I don't have a great issue with it, and I sort of chuckle to myself, you know, with the side hustle. I mean, the industry that we're all in, you almost make a living out of side hustles, don't you?
I'm not as comfortable with it. She's supposed to be the boss of AFLW. The AFLW, the first time in the league's inception, doesn't have a start date, and she's over commentating swimming. I really like Nicole. I think she's a really good operator. I thought that was an own goal, personally. But I take your point, but that she doesn't have to be in the same room to get stuff done, and she still could have been working remotely. Understand all that. But I didn't like when Richard Goyder was making decisions. Was it last year when he could have come to Melbourne and decided to do it because he had a board meeting in WA for Qantas? I don't like it. Anyway, that's just my point of view. Moving on. Hey, so deadlines. Can you both give me an insight here? I feel like you use the D word around old school journos and anxiety goes through the roof. So I was working on a story, Ash, earlier before we started our first hour. And my deadline's basically got to be 6 o'clock because I can't really write after six unless I'm writing in ad breaks. And if it goes past six, well, I just know that I've got a longer night ahead of me and hopefully no one beats me to the punch and I can go sit on my laptop after I go off air and get a story up online. Might not make the paper, though. It wasn't that long ago that wasn't a fallback option.
Yeah. Who wants to go first?
I've got some deadline horror stories.
I bet.
But it's...
Have you got one that springs to mind?
Yeah. It would be when I covered the... my first year as a journalist, as a full-time sports writer, I was sent to Adelaide for what became the epic state game between South Australia and Victoria that South Australia won in the dying seconds. We used to have these very clunky... acoustic couplers, I call laptop things that you carried in a suitcase. I was never very good at them, and I never did anything like try to practice sending some test files in the meantime. And of course, I pressed the wrong button, and the copy was totally garbled.
Oh no!
And disappeared about 5 minutes before deadline. So I had to basically dictate it on the spot, just from the best of my notes. Delayed the paper by significantly. To get my story in.
Which is a big issue.
And yeah.
It's a big deal doing that.
Yeah, it was Patrick Smith was my sports editor, and at the end of it he said, we'll review your performance when you get back. And I flew back the next morning thinking, from Adelaide, it was in Adelaide, flew back the next morning thinking I was going to get sacked. And justifiably so. But he basically said, you've got one last chance to redeem yourself. And I worked very hard on the technology thereafter. Beaver. So that's my deadline story. And
love that.
I live to fight another day. But that can be daunting. I've seen very good journalists, and I'm not going to name someone on air that. But even another story, we might talk about it off air, about a journo that we both worked with who had a major deadline malfunction one day.
Yeah, I was actually just
I'm not going to name
this person on air.
Was that at Princess Park?
Before my time, I've heard the story.
Okay. Or maybe we're talking about. Different people.
Have you got a horror story, Ben?
I've got a few. Well, not so much horror stories, just the way that it would leave the adrenaline pumping. Before I started on sport, on the Herald, March 88. I covered police rounds for about 6 or 8 months before that, including covering. I started, thankfully, just I missed the Hoddle Street massacre, but I covered the Queen Street massacre, which was 4 months after. And I can remember the worst type of journalism is intrudes, where once you know the names of the victims were released, you went to try and get an interview with the next of kin.
Yep.
And because there was the eight victims, I remember with Norm Orloff, famous photographer, one of the interviews we had to do was actually up near Pentridge. And but coming back into town, because the Herald being an afternoon paper, and clear with the traffic, and he had to get back to the dark room to develop his pictures. So
not like today, we just chuck it into the laptop and send it into the system in 10 seconds.
All that sort of stuff. So he dropped me off somewhere. There was no way known I was going to be able to get back to the office in time and bash out 10 or 12 pars. So I remember somewhere in the city running into a jeweller's shop and thrusting a 10 or 20 cent piece and saying, I need to use your phone, and then filing copy over the phone to our copy takers that used to take your call, you know.
This is mind-blowing to me.
Stop, break, new par.
Stop, new par.
Which now the great Bruce Tobin has produced T-shirts, famous police roundsman. I've got a couple of – have you got one of those T-shirts?
I need to get one.
You do. Black T-shirt, white writing, stop, break, new par. And so even that, it gives me a shudder just thinking back to those days, let alone as well with the Herald, pre-mobile phones, and you used to have to – so you're ringing people very early in the morning for stories. I can't remember which order it was with Ross Oakley and Alan Schwab. Jeff Poulter taught me this. There was one of them, you had about a seven-minute window from about 6.37 to 6.45 between them being out of the shower and having their breakfast and getting in the car to ring them at home if you wanted to get them. And some
on the landlines, of course.
Yeah, some of the horror stories. And I'm good mates with him now. I remember having to ring Robert Shaw and wake him up in a Hobart hotel after Fitzroy had been clobbered in a pre-season game by Hawthorn. Did he give me the rounds of the kitchen, as which we all used to cop that at various stages. So we could regale you, Sammy, with those stories.
I had to ring Ron Barassi to tell him Ted Whitten passed away, and then got Ron Barassi to dictate a column to me. This was about 9:30 at night.
Oh my goodness! So what Ron was that
in Sydney? 95. Ron was in Sydney, and he hadn't heard. And Ron had an agreement to write for The Age.
His last year as coach.
Last year's coach. So that was a deadline. Then we had to compose a Brassy column on deadline.
We could talk about that for hours, couldn't we? We could do a whole podcast on deadline horror stories. Let's go to this, Matty. You ain't nothing
but a hound dog. And now on Sports Day, Hound Wars with Ash Brown.
It's a tight leaderboard. Tom Brown and Sam Landsberg are both tied on 11 votes going into this week. Mitch Cleary, 10. Ash.
Well, Sam Landsberger is now the outright leader. He gets three votes for the Essendon-Nova Paris story.
Yeah.
There are leaks coming out of Essendon.
But, it's a good story.
Good story from Sam.
Big tick.
He gets a three.
It was in The Australian as well, inside Jess Halloran's piece. Yep. So the News Corp had a really good Thursday.
Two votes to Kath Loughnan. For the Clarko interview that, you know, just coming onto 360 and setting the agenda for about Clarko's aspirations for what will get him back into coaching. I thought it was really good work.
You know, I don't know if many people know this, but Kathy's obviously an excellent presenter. But I think the thing that gets lost about her sometimes is that at her core, she's just a really well-researched interviewer. And it's not easy. That's not an easy skill to have. I mean, she knows her footy inside out. We know she's an A-plus presenter. But you saw there sitting next to Alistair Clarkson, completely holding her own, asking genuinely good questions. I thought it was a terrific interview and a wonderful moment for Fox, because Fox have a lot of great callers and a lot of great presenters. But like I thought she was really, really impressive.
And one vote to Mitch Cleary for the Indigenous All-Stars game, which I think looked like fairly informed mail.
He's having a great year, Mitch, isn't he?
Mitch has been a very good recruit for Seven. So that is this week's Hound Wars.
Anything for you to add there, Beth?
No. I'm just looking at the record, which Ash has done a magnificent job again putting it together, of course.
Who's on the cover there?
Well, we've got Chad Wingard, Buddy Franklin, Charlie Cameron and Sonny Boy Walters.
Sonny.
Because it is a Doug Nichols round. Rounds, isn't it?
Rounds, we have two rounds. 2 weeks.
Yes. Which I like that, actually, because it gives
every team home and away.
Home game.
Yeah, exactly. I think it works really well.
Am I going to make this comment or am I not? No, I'm going to make it. I absolutely love the Indigenous jumpers every year. And I think they actually get better every year. I would have loved someone at the start of the year to look at the Richmond one and then look at the Essendon one and think, hang on, Aren't these two teams playing each other? Do they look a little too similar? There's going to be jumper confusion on Saturday night. Guaranteed.
Last year it was the Anzac game. Jumpers were similar. Yes. This year it's
Did you notice that, Bev, when you're looking at the jumpers? Like, they both individually look unbelievable. 11 out of 10. Together, playing against each other, how can anyone know who they are?
I must admit, I haven't quite noticed that. I'm going to have to go back and
have a look.
That's very good.
Do you know, just on that, and not wanting to bring my club into it.
I thought we'd get to the same somewhere.
No, well, I actually suggested to Matt Finnis a couple of years ago. I'm not sure why 1 year, and St Kilda's wearing the Nicky Winmar design jumper again for the second year in a row.
Which is a great jumper.
I'm just not sure why 1 year St Kilda just doesn't change the white to yellow. And then we've just have the Aboriginal flag. Red, yellow, black.
It's a pretty good suggestion.
Matt thought that as well. But anyway.
It hasn't pointed your influence at St Kilda's waning, Peter.
Thank you. There's not much influence.
Ash, great to have you on.
Good to be here.
Ash Brown, the chief of the AFL record on Sports Day every Thursday.